Dharma Talk, delivered by Venerable Usilananda at the Tathagata Meditation Center, San Jose, California, Special Retreat of November 1998.
Okay. So, our retreat has come to an end. And I hope every yogi gets something out of this retreat, although what you get may be not what you expected. But during the retreat, you keep your mind pure, you are away from mental defilements, so you enjoy or you experience the mental seclusion from mental defilements, seclusion from worries and anxieties from the outside world. To reach the final goal is not easy, and we don't know how much longer we will have to make effort to reach that goal. Even during the time of the Buddha, even though there were people who had potential to get emancipation or to get enlightenment, did not all get enlightenment. There are many reasons that block their way to the attainment of enlightenment. It is explained to us that there are two reasons why people fail to get enlightenment, although they had the potential to reach enlightenment, and although they even get to see the Buddha. The reasons they gave are: one, lack of action or lack of exertion, and two, having a bad friend. We are, or whatever we do, we need a good friend. So by associating with a good friend, we can develop our own faculties, we can develop into reaching into higher stages of spiritual path. At friends, then we are influenced by these people, and we tend to follow their, say, wrong activities or their wrong advices, and so we did very wrong things following the advice of bad friends. King Ajatasattu. Now, Devadatta enticed him when Ajatasattu was a young prince to his side and incited him to kill his own father so that he could become a king. And as you know, Devadatta was a very ambitious man. He tried to kill the Buddha to become the Buddha himself, and so he incited the young prince Ajatasattu to kill his own father to become a king. And Ajatasattu was successful, so he He became a king and he killed his own father. Although Devadatta attempted three times to kill the Buddha, he was not successful because nobody can kill the Buddhas. So the first time he sent sharpshooters to shoot the Buddha, and the second time he sent the great elephant to attack the Buddha. When these two failed, he himself pushed a big rock onto the Buddha when Buddha was walking up and down on a hill. But the rock missed the Buddha and hit some rock on the hill, and the splinter of that rock hit the Buddha on his toes, and so Buddha had his blood congealed there and had a severe pain. But that was the most Devadatta can do to the life of the Buddha. But that act of causing the blood congealed in the body of the Buddha is as bad as killing one's own father. It is said that after killing his father, Ajatasattu was remorseful, and he was always haunted by this horrible memory, and so he even could not go to sleep well. But years later, and he did not dare to go to the Buddha and see him because he had killed the Buddha's disciple who was his father. But years later, about 8 years before the Buddha's death, he went to see the Buddha. So he asked his trusted friend, the royal physician Jivaka, to take him to the Buddha. And so he went out to the Buddha to see the Buddha, and he went out at night. So he was always afraid of people trying to kill him. Now, people who had done something like this is always suspicious, and they live in fear. So he was afraid that there might be attempt on his life, and so he had a great number of people to guard him. It is said that he went to the monastery with 500 elephants. So he went to the monastery, he saw the Buddha, and he asked the Buddha to explain to him the fruits of being a recluse that could be realized in this very life. And so in response to his question, Buddha delivered to him a discourse now known as Samanyapala Sutta. So it is a fairly long sutta included in the collection of long discourses. So at the end of that discourse, Ajatasattu was very glad, and so he declared to be the disciple of the Buddha who took refuge in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. And then he left. So after he left, Buddha said to his monks, "Monks, if this king had not killed his own father, he would have become a Sotapanna on this very seat." Now that he had killed his own father, he was to suffer in hell. And so after death, King Ajatasattu fell to hell. And so now he is suffering in one of the great hells. So even though he was very devoted to the Buddha after that, that devotion to the Buddha could not save him or could not prevent him from being reborn in hell. Now, Ajatasattu had the capability to gain enlightenment in that life, and he did get to see the Buddha and to listen to the Dhamma talks of the Buddha. But he was unable to gain enlightenment. Not only was he unable to gain enlightenment, but he went down to hell and is suffering there because he had killed his own father. And he killed his own father because he associated with a bad friend, the Venerable Devadatta. So associating with a bad friend can be that much damaging to one's prosperity, one's spiritual growth, and to one's rebirth. So associating with a bad friend is one reason why people do not get enlightenment, although they have the capability to become arahants in that life, and they get to see the Buddha. First reason. Lack of action, lack of exertion. Now, lack of action is of two kinds. Lack of action on the part of the teacher, and lack of action on the part of, let us say, students. A wandering ascetic and a lay person went to see the Buddha. And when the ascetic saw the monks surrounding the Buddha, very calm and quiet and disciplined, he was very glad, and so he expressed his gladness or appreciation of this tranquility of the monks to the Buddha. So the Buddha told him that among the monks there were arahants, sotapannas, and so on, and also those who practice the four foundations of mindfulness. When he heard this, the layperson, his name was Pissa, so the layperson said, "Pandit, it's wonderful that you have taught the foundations of mindfulness to all people. Even we," he said, "as laypersons, practice the foundations of mindfulness from time to time." His talk to them, telling them that there are four kinds of persons, and then asked Pissa which person he pleases him. And so Pissa answered that the fourth person pleases his mind. And then Buddha asked him why, say he likes the last or the fourth person, and he gave reasons. And after giving the reasons, he just said, "Bhante, I'm busy, so I'm now going." So the Buddha said, "Do what you think fit." So he got up and left. When he left, Buddha said to the monks, "If Pissa would have stayed until the end of my exposition of the four types of individuals, he would have been endowed with great benefits." So that means the commentary explains that he would have become a sotapanna. But now that he left, before the end of the talk, that he was deprived of that opportunity. But Buddha said, although he was deprived of this opportunity to become a Sotapanna, he got some things from coming and seeing him, that Pissa got faith or devotion in the Buddha, and also he heard about the four foundations of mindfulness for his further practice. In this story, Pissa failed to become a Sotapanna, not because he was not endowed with the capabilities, not because he was endowed with paramis, and not because he did not see the Buddha, because he did see the Buddha, and he talked to the Buddha, he listened to the Buddha. But because he left before the discourse was over. So that is non-action or lack of action on his part. That means he should have stayed until the end of the exposition. He should have listened to the exposition given by the Buddha. And he did not do that. He did not make that effort. And so, for lack of effort on his part, he was unable to become a Sotapanna. Now, this story teaches us one good lesson. That is, when someone is giving a Dhamma talk, you should listen to the Dhamma talk until the end. So you should not get up and leave in the middle of a Dhamma talk. People are impatient. If they don't think they are not getting anything out of this out of the talk, then they wanted to leave, and they had no patience to wait until the end of the talk. And so they lost the opportunity of getting information about the teachings of the Buddha, information about how to practice meditation and so on. And so they also lose a great opportunity by getting up and leaving before the Dhamma talk ends. You can say, oh, this time we are too busy and so we have to leave, but we can listen to the tapes later on. But listening a talk while it is being given and listening the recording later are different. So your frame of mind is different. When a person was talking, then you have more attention you pay to the talk, and also you have this how to call that eagerness, say to listen to the talk. But when you play a tape and listen to it, although you may be listening, you have not as much attention you pay to the talk, or you have not as much respect to the talk. So although you can listen the talk later on tapes, it is better to listen to the talk while it is being given. So that is the lack of exertion on the part of, say, the student or the listener. And the other one is lack of exertion or lack of action on the part of the teacher. There was a Brahmin called Janusoni. So one day, the Venerable Sariputta heard about him, and ask a monk whether that Brahmin practiced as heedfulness, and the answer was no. So when he met that Brahmin, Sariputta asked him, do you practice heedfulness? He said, no, Bhante, we have many things to do. And he gave 10 excuses why he was not mindful. So Sariputta talked to him the ill consequences of heedlessness. And then later, when that Brahmin was gravely ill, actually on his deathbed, he sent a man to give respects to the Buddha in his name, and also to invite the Venerable Sariputta to him and to come and talk to him. So the Venerable Sariputta accepted and went to him, and then asked him whether his sickness is increasing or decreasing. And he said, my sickness is increasing. And so Sariputta, Venerable Sariputta, taught him something, asking him, which is better, to be reborn in hell or to reborn as an animal, and then to be reborn as an animal, and to be reborn as a human being, and so on and so on, until the highest realm of the devas. And then Venerable Sariputta said, which is better, to be reborn in the highest deva realm or in the Brahma realm? So when the Sariputta said the Brahma realm, the Brahmin was very, very happy. Then he said, oh, Sariputta said Brahma realm. Sariputta said Brahma realm. Then the Venerable Sariputta thought that the Brahmins are attached to the realm of the Brahmas, because their way is to reach the world of the Brahma. So the Venerable Sariputta taught him the way to reach the Brahma world. That means Sariputta taught him the four Brahma viharas, the four divine abidings. So after teaching him how to practice loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity, the Venerable Sariputta left. So sometime after he left, the Brahmin died, and he was reborn as a Brahma. Maybe Sariputta was happy when he went back to the monastery with the thinking that he had shown the Brahmin the way to the Brahma world. But at that time, Buddha was at the monastery in the Dhamma hall giving Dhamma talk to monks, and Buddha said, here comes Sariputta. Although he could do better, he has just taught the Brahmin the way to the Brahma world, which is actually inferior to becoming an arahant. Then Sariputta came to the Buddha and paid respect to him and said, Bhante, Brahmin Dhananjani paid respects to you. Then the Buddha said, Sariputta, although you can do better, you just put him on the road to Brahma world and you come back. Now, the text didn't say more about this, but the commentary explains that that was a, what do you call it? That was a hint Buddha gave to Sariputta. That means, Sariputta, you go to him and preach to him again. So Sariputta knew, or Sariputta got that hint. And so he went up to the Brahma world and gave a discourse to Janusondi, who had become a great Brahma. And it is we are not told whether that great Brahma became an arahant or not, but I think he became an arahant. But it is said that from that time on, whenever the Venerable Sariputta gave a Dhamma talk, even if it is just a verse or four lines, he always include the Four Noble Truths. This story, the Brahmin Janusoni possessed the capability to become an arahant. And he got to see the Buddha and his chief disciple, Sariputta. But he did not become an arahant because there was lack of action on the part of the Venerable Sariputta. That means Venerable Sariputta could have taught him the way to enlightenment, the foundations of four foundations of mindfulness and vipassana practice. But instead, he thought the Brahmins are attached to the Brahma world, and so he taught him just the way to reach the world of the Brahmas. So here, Janusoni failed to become an arahant because of lack of action, the right action on the part of the Venerable Sariputta. So we must remember these stories and take lessons from these stories. That is, we should not, or we must not associate with bad people, associate with people who will detract us from this spiritual path and who will take us to the ways of evil things and who will eventually take us to the four woeful states. And also we should see to it that there is no fault on our part. If we are students, then we will fulfill the obligations of a student. We will make effort a student should make. And if we are teachers also, we will try to lead the students to a right destination. So we should keep these stories in mind and try to avoid both the faults on the part of the students and on the part of the teachers. As teachers, say, we will see to it that we give you the right method, we teach you the right method of practice and give you correct instructions. And as students, now, we monks are both teachers and students. So as students, we should not be lacking in a proper effort, and we should follow the instructions faithfully. Now, sometimes people come with what is called a pride in their former practices or resistance. And so when they come to a center and then they are unable to get rid of that resistance. And with that resistance, they cannot hope to make any progress, or they cannot hope to get any benefit out of that practice. So it is important that as students or as meditators, we try to follow the instructions faithfully. So when you go to a center, then you follow these instructions given at that center and do not have any resistance or arguments or whatever. Because the instructions given at the retreats, at the centers, are built up through years, and so they are well-tested instructions. So it is important that as students, say, we follow the instructions faithfully and closely. The teachers want their students to follow the instructions closely and faithfully, and so the students should make effort, say, to follow the instructions. As I said, instructions given are accumulated through the years, and so the instructions are not just one teacher's instruction. It is an instruction of the whole tradition, which has its roots in the teachings of the Buddha. So when these instructions are faithfully followed, then people get begin to get results from following these instructions. So it is important that the teachers give correct guidance in the practice of meditation, and the students or the meditators should follow the guidance of the teachers. I want you to remember the instructions, and that is why I say the instructions again and again. So it may be boring to some people, but many people reported to me that it is good to hear the instructions every now and then, so that they do not forget the instructions. So instructions repeated are actually for the benefit of the meditators. And if the instructions are too often, please be patient and take them as the presence given again and again. So by practicing, by acting correctly towards the instructions, or that is, by following the instructions, the yogis will be able to get the results they expect from the practice of meditation. During this retreat, first I talked about the Dhamma heritage. So we who are practicing Vipassana meditation are at least making a right effort to take the Dhamma heritage of the Buddha. Talk about the burden of the aggregates, the heavy burden we are carrying every moment of our lives, and also that we can at least not pick up a new burden by practicing Vipassana meditation. And by the power of Vipassana meditation, we will be able to lay down the heavy burden once and for all. And last night I talked about what to do when we have pain or when we are sick. Although I talked about all these are the teachings of the Buddha. So what you heard during this retreat are all the teachings of the Buddha related by me. So we have respect for these teachings, for these pieces of advice, and we should follow the lessons or advices given in these discourses. What heritage must we take? Dhamma heritage or material heritage? Dhamma heritage. Or we must at least make effort to take the Dhamma heritage. We want to put down the burden. Do you really want to put down the burden? If so, we have to practice vipassana meditation. So by the practice of vipassana meditation, little by little, say we make our burden less heavy. And ultimately, when we are totally successful with our practice, then we'll be able to put down the burden altogether. And when we experience pain, or when we are sick, what will we do? Complain? Or angry with the sickness, or angry with people, or blaming others? No, we will not do any of these things. So we will try not to let our minds be sick, although our body is sick. So, we will make effort to take the Dhamma heritage of the Buddha. We will try our best to lay down this heavy burden of 5 aggregates. And although our body is sick, we will see to it that our mind is not sick. So may we all be successful following these determinations and achieve our goal in this very life.